could you guys go around and introduce yourselves? And by go around, Anjali, I mean, could you start?
Yes, of course. My name is Anjali Grantham. I am a Kodiak person, but I now live in Juneau, and I'm a part of the Alaska Salmon Fellows. It's a program of the Alaska Humanities Forum, and I am directing the Salmon Projections project, which the Bronoff Museum will be hosting on Thursday.
And there's actually a lot of background to cover on this, because it seems like a network of cool different projects that are all kind of interconnected. But why don't we start with what the Alaska Humanity Forum does and how that has kind of led to the Alaska Salmon Fellows. Could you explain that, Anjali?
Yeah, the Alaska Humanities Forum is the it's pretty much the statewide representative for the National Endowment for the Humanities, and they engage in and fund projects across Alaska related to the humanities. So from community conversations to exhibits to research to performances. And right now there's a lot of interest. There's always been a lot of interest in Alaska for salmon, of course, but right now there's a big push that's happening to do more to gain visibility about the importance of our wild salmon systems. And so the Humanities Forum has this program. It's a leadership program called the Alaska Salmon Fellows, and the intent of that is to bring together a multidisciplinary group of people from across Alaska who are connected in some deep but diverse way to salmon. And together we're creating a new network, with the recognition that, as one of the Humanities Forum people say, that salmon have a people problem. And so we recognize that although there are habitat issues, et cetera, a lot of these things can be solved by people working together. So that's the intent of the Salmon Fellows program, is to unite a diverse group of people and to think and talk about and to create projects to enhance equity and sustainability in Alaska's salmon systems.
It seems like a great way to network between people who are doing all these different things in their own lives. And it makes sense that you would bring a lot of projects into the circle. Anjali, you've actually been doing a lot on fisheries. And could you talk a little bit about West Side Stories?
Yes. So 2 years ago, the Bronoff Museum did this really wonderful project called West Side Stories. I was the curator of collections and exhibits at the Bronoff Museum at the time, and we spent the summer of 2015 doing oral histories of West Side fishermen, cannery workers, set netters, villagers. We worked with professional photographer Brianna Peterson, who took documentary photos of West Side places, and we did radio producing, short films, an exhibit. We sent out story kits to all the different set net sites on the West Side so that people at Fish Camp could create their own archives for contributing to the museum's collection. And we did this recognizing that the West Side is a special place to many people in Kodiak, but because it's so remote, there really isn't quality or really any quantity of history materials about the place. And so we decided to do this to engage West Side people in making their own histories. And as part of the Salmon Projections on Thursday, we will be featuring some of Brianna Peterson's West Side Stories photographs of different fish camps and canneries on the West Side. And the exhibit will be open, too, so people can see the West Side Stories exhibit.
So Sarah Harrington is with us. She's the executive director of the Bronoff Museum. Sarah, could you explain a little bit about what Salmon Projections is?
Sure. Well, we're excited to have Salmon Projections this Thursday, because it's going to be kind of a fun new event to help bring in, like Anjali was saying, a diverse audience, kind of connecting people around the community with salmon at the Bronoff Museum. So people are invited to come. The event starts at 7 p.m., and we're going to be doing literally projections on the museum. If the weather's nice, we will be projecting outside a lot of the images that Anjali mentioned from the West Side Stories exhibit, but as well as some new art pieces from artists like Deborah Batanka, who we have here. And then we'll be having conversation about how do people feel about those images, and how do we connect with those feelings? How do we connect with the images, and what does that mean for our community moving forward? So we just kind of want to come down and facilitate some great discussion, bring people to the Bronoff as a community center to have conversations like this, And of course, we're also going to have some great food there. We're hoping that that will help bring people. We wanted to have salmon dishes alongside the salmon projections. So Happy Sushi Time is going to cater the event.
All right. And Deborah, you are very active in the community. I'm always seeing your name connected to things. Could you talk a little bit about the piece that you've submitted to this project?
Yeah, the piece that I did was on a black paper, so it's like a retro style. And I did it for my fellowship last year in Seattle for the Doris Duke Conservation Scholars Program, and it's the accompaniment to my story of my parents' work in the cannery and growing up having those parents. So in a way, I connected my life story with the salmon cycle, but we know that the salmon cycle ends with a salmon coming back and its carcass enriching the place that it was born in. But in my family, a salmon's life cycle ends at the cannery. So it's butchered, it's packed, it's sent out. So in that drawing, it was my little sister's curiosity. So there's like a little kid holding a magnifying glass. And then mine is the looping because I still haven't returned to the Philippines. So there's this thing of wanting that transition between Philippines and Kodiak Island. And then my younger brother, first time experience with the fishing industry, going and fishing. And then my mom and my dad. So there's salmon's cycle, but there's also hands. So people's connection, especially my family, is what I highlighted in that art piece.
So there's a gigantic Filipino population in Kodiak, and the same for many locations in Alaska. I was in Juneau for a while, and while there, one of the stories I did was focusing on the reason so many Filipino people are coming to Alaska, and it's often because family connections are already here, and then more family comes. Do you have a very large family here?
Yes, I have relatives here, but it was my dad who brought us to Kodiak Island. So, yeah, because he was working at the cannery now for more than 35 years. So I was 12 when I moved to Kodiak. So,
looking back, I think many of us have memories of our parents very vaguely. For instance, my mother was a teacher, and I don't really remember exactly what she was doing during the day, but I remember she spent a lot of time grading papers. I wasn't exactly sure what she was grading, but that's what I remember from my childhood, like many hours for grading papers and calling people up and calling parents up and being like, hey, your kid needs to come to school. So are there any memories you have of your parents that stand out in your mind of their work?
Yeah, for my dad, especially growing up in the Philippines, I remember phone calls like coming from Kodiak to the Philippines, and my dad would be saying, I'm so busy, there's a lot of work, but now seeing it declining like slowly every year has been the one that's changed. Because I was six, and I remember him saying like 10 hours, 16 hours, and he works the night shift too. So that is what I remember. But now it's like I see my dad more often in the house. So there's like, when is that extra tough boots ever going to go back to the cannery is what I think about. Because that boots is like right by the heater warming up. Is it ever going to step on a slime line and a slimy cannery row again?
And so is he still working in the cannery?
Yes, he's still working there.
Mm-hmm. Has business just gone down, or what do you think?
Yeah, from what I noticed, too, and other friends that... My mom worked there for 1 year, but then she stopped, and I noticed how a lot of her friends would call, because there's new immigrants coming in hoping that there's going to be work so that they could establish financial stability, but really, cannery is very seasonal. Fishing industry in itself is very seasonal, so, yeah. But, yeah, it's going down is what I'm seeing.
Okay, so your observation is that the cannery business might not be as booming as it was maybe 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm, yes.
So what has your family done to kind of supplement their income, to find different jobs or develop different paths in their careers?
At least for me, it took me college, because at first when I was in middle school and high school, I wasn't proud to say that my parents work in a cannery. I was shameful and not even sharing that. And when I went to college, it's like there's actually value in the work that they do too. And I'd have conversations with high school students who have the experience. I never went because my mom said, do not go there, it's hard. But I hear high school students saying, Deborah, I don't want to put that in my resume. So there's this thing of why? Because a lot of people would be proud of the work they do, but in this particular work, it's not so much from their physical looks to the way what this work is. So it's just, yeah.
So what are they doing to...
Mm-hmm. At least in my family, my mom is working, not in a cannery anymore, so she has her home daycare. And for me, as a student, and seeing that is taking it on education. And I help high school students realize the hard work of our parents, that we stand on their shoulders so that we can have a better opportunity, because that's why they bring us. A lot of Filipino families bring their children so they have a better life. So I make my fellow students realize our parents are working there, so let's put it in education and move it forward somehow. So education, I think.
That's an interesting transition from working in a cannery to starting a daycare. When did that happen for your mother?
I think my mom 3 years ago. So our retired teacher, Nanette Helen House, was the one who told her to maybe find a different job instead of the cannery, because sometimes it's not enough to. Like, I remember my dad only bringing in $300 for 2 weeks, and that's not enough.
How much of it, of your dad's decreased hours, is him just deciding to step back?
I don't know exactly, but I remember as a kid, it was a lot to compare to now. I guess their bodies too is like growing old, so sometimes he just like doesn't go to work now. So like that's the other thing, because a lot of kinder workers are getting old. Some of them are already retired but still working just to send some of their paychecks to back in the Philippines. And a lot of them do not go to the doctors, even if their bodies are not functioning well, because they don't want to have that financial cost of going to the doctor, but rather instead keep that money and send it to the Philippines. So.
Yeah, I've heard that being a cannery worker is physically taxing. What about it is so rough on the body?
Standing in the cold, I think by the slime line, at least from my mom's story she would tell, is like you could. I remember seeing my mom's legs with the varicose veins almost popping out. So it was so fat, and then when she takes out her feet from those extra tough boots, you could see it swelling. And when your shoulders are in just a slime line doing the same thing over and over, and then heavy fish like halibut is what I remember her telling. And even now, family, friends that are still there in the cannery and saying that it's hard on the body. And sometimes young high school students too is what I remember them saying. When I breathe in, the smell of the salmon being cleaned is just, some of them have allergies, so their lungs cannot even take it, like I want to puke. And that's a high school student's experience. And I'm like, I never had that. So.
Has your dad ever tried other jobs, or does he have other jobs he does?
He hopped in from one cannery to another in the last 35 years that he's been here in Kodiak. But he had a stint at the United States Coast Guard base as a janitor. Okay. But that was about it. But he loves working in the cannery, so he returned back there.
Yeah, what has he said he loves about it?
I think it's the people. And he's used to that same work, the routine too, even if it's hard, like despite headaches. It's just, they still go back. And he has allergies and would come home after a salmon season, like especially pink, is he would come home coughing, but he still goes back the next day and take pain relievers and what's not.
Within the industry, within the cannery profession or job or industry, is there a way to move up or different positions that you can take along the line to kind of relieve yourself or create some diversity?
I do not think he tried that. I believe that they can be foremen in there and not just a processor, but I think that's the job that he took, but never took any other positions is what I know. Yeah, there's quality control and other ones, but yeah.
And your mom's, you said it was a preschool or was it
a home daycare.
A home daycare. Mm-hmm. Okay, what age students does she take care of?
From newborns to 12-year-olds. So,
how mm-hmm. many students does she have now?
I think maybe 5 or 6.
All right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, what does she think? How is she finding it so far?
My mom loves it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When I go home, I see it that she has a more stable income and also a more comforting environment because she's at home and compared to the cannery. And when her friends that are still working in the cannery would call her, I'm like, Juliet, you're so lucky that you're not working in the cannery anymore. And sometimes my mom would cry that knowing that she's now in a comfortable place and then those people that she still worked with before years ago are still there and sometimes not having enough money. So there's those complexities within Filipino cannery laborers. So,
do you think your dad is close to retirement?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think he only has a couple more years.
Is there some retirement package that the cannery offers to long-term employees?
That I'm not so sure, but I think it's only the Social Security pension plan.
Yeah. Anjali, have you had any experience working in a cannery?
Nope. I've spent time at canneries, and I delivered to canneries, and I was a fisherman, and I've sure spent a lot of time looking at the history, but I have never been a cannery worker.
Can you give us any insight into the cannery business and some realities that we may not be aware of with the canneries right now?
Well, I mean, I can for sure, to call them canneries is kind of a misnomer considering that so few are still canning salmon. I think in Kodiak there are just 3. Most are now freezing. There's, any Kodiak listener that's involved in the fishing industry knows that the health of the economy in Kodiak is really tied to international currents with currency, with consumer choices. It's a big and complex business that unites biology, workers, global economics, supply and demand, and politics. And all of those elements come together really on the processing floor. And it's been an industry that from the beginning has relied on low wage, often immigrant workers to do the tough work. And that's really how it's been since the beginning of the industry in the 1870s.
Was there a particular time in history when there was a shift in, as you said, they're more appropriately named processors now rather than canneries?
Well, refrigeration technology has really changed the fleet and the canning industry and processing industry. And I can't tell you exactly when there was a watershed moment where most places had removed their canning lines and put in freezer plants. But it's been in the past several decades that transition has really quickened.
Are there any changes in patterns you've noticed for the Kodiak community on the processing cannery side?
Well, there's waves of new immigrants, of course, a major shift in Kodiak's fishing industry occurred with the king crab boom, where we went from being a salmon town to a year-round fishing town because of king crab and shrimp. And then those two fisheries completely collapsed, and people scrambled to figure out what to do next. And that's when the groundfish industry started. People had these boats, and they had boat payments to make, and they pioneered a new fishery. And so now it's Kodiak is a really diversified fishing port, and it's because of that that we have year-round cannery work instead of previously when it was just a summer sort of occupation with the salmon season. But I think salmon still is, in many ways, the mainstay of Kodiak. It's the thing that people can rely on with the boom and busts of the economy and fisheries. I think it's been more of a reliable fishery over time, and we're hoping to keep it that way.
So you've been going around to different locations and doing histories about these different canneries and different subjects related to fisheries. Could you kind of talk about the origin of this interest?
Oh, well, I'm from Kodiak, and I come from a fishing family, and I've always been curious and a lover of history. And so I also studied historic preservation when I was in grad school, and I saw these old canneries as being, first of all, some of the oldest buildings in Alaska, and places that contain so many stories from all over the world, so many different walks of life. I mean, it's a place of scientific innovation. It's a place of immigration, a place of new families coming together, of, you know, global marketing. There's just so many ways of looking at these places and thinking about the stories. And so it's that really caught my attention, that there's such there's a lot going on and a lot to think about and talk about when we're looking at the industry and these canneries.
Are you working on another installment as far as these audio segments go?
I have a podcast that I'm doing called Alaska Out of the Vault, and that's available on iTunes. It looks at Alaska's history through museum objects. And I'm also working on a book right now about the history of canneries in Southeast Alaska, and that should be published in the spring. And then doing the Salmon Projections and Salmon Fellows work, in which in October we're going to be having our next Salmon Fellows gathering. And at the gathering, we're going to be deciding what our group projects will be. And for these projects, they're hopefully going to be large-scale and involve a lot of Alaskans in conversations and hopefully shifting the ways that we consider salmon and our efforts to enhance salmon habitat and also provide for greater equity in the systems.
And this is the first cohort of fellows, right?
Yes, there's going to be at least two, and I know that soon there's going to be an application. They're going to be recruiting the next group. Also, the Salmon Fellows are going to be coming to Kodiak for a gathering in April or May, and so there'll be 16 of us coming from around the state to come and talk and to meet people in the community. So that'll be a good opportunity to engage with fellows and learn more about our work. And I also really encourage people to come out on Thursday to the Salmon Projections. It's an effort where I've worked with a bunch of artists and photographers from around Alaska, including some other Salmon Fellows, and the images depict people and salmon and the different ways that we interact with salmon. So there's some really beautiful images from Southeast, from Bristol Bay, from the Kuskokwim, from the Yukon, and from Kodiak. There's gill netters, there's trollers. There's seiners, there's sports fishermen, there's subsistence users, there's families. And so there's a wide way, and there's, of course, people who just eat salmon. So there's a wide way that people interact with salmon, and these projections are showing that diversity of youth and the people and the way that they're engaged in the fish. Like Deborah was saying, a big way that people are engaged in fishing in Alaska and salmon is on the processing line as well. So it's just kind of recognizing these variety of interactions that we have as Alaskans.
So it sounds like you've taken a leadership role among the fellows. How does that work out? Does each person take a leadership role for their region, or how is this organized?
Well, the 16 fellows represent most major salmon systems in Alaska, I'd say. We have Yukon, Kuskokwim. I'm somewhat representing Kodiak, even though I'm not there right now. Southeast folks, people in Anchorage, Bristol Bay, and we had our first gathering in Kenai this spring, and there we were tasked with coming up with what are termed small projects with radical intent, and each of us proposed a small project, and this was my small project. In a way, it's kind of a carryover from the Industrial Arts District plan that I was working on last year. Kind of trying to reconsider ways that we look at Shelikof and the working waterfront and do more to bring arts and culture down to maritime workers and to celebrate the work of those who are involved in maritime trades. And with this project, instead of making murals, I got a really nice projector, and artwork will be projected on the sides of buildings. And after Kodiak, I'm going to be bringing the projector to Igiagig, actually, on the Alaska Peninsula, and we'll be doing a show there. And there's a chance that it'll probably go to other communities as well. It kind of be a grassroots salmon art project.
Yeah, I know you were seeking funds, I think it was last year, for that project where you might do murals on the side of buildings related to, like, fisheries and canneries. Could you talk a little bit about what happened with that?
Yeah, so it was Art Place America grant opportunity, a creative placemaking project, and the idea was to turn Chelicop into an industrial arts district. I contend that it already is one. It's culinary arts, you know, and it's fiber arts for the net hangers is ways in which we can think of the seafood industry outside of just the economic production, but also the cultural production. And so I was hoping to turn that concept on its head and make it a better place to spend time, considering that that's where most people in Kodiak spend most of their days and is not even a covered bike shelter. So the Art Place America grant is really competitive. I was selected out of, I think there were like, I don't remember, like 1,500 initial applicants. I was one of just several dozen finalists, and in the end, the project was not funded. However, I think it really started new conversations, and it was the genesis for this project. So I think that good things came from it, even if we didn't get $500,000 to implement it.
So it seems like it would be very doable to get volunteers possibly to do murals. Have you thought about maybe just starting with one wall and seeking artists and finding people who might be able to donate?
I'm sure that there was a lot of interest in the project. There were 10 different community partners that stepped up that were committed to providing leadership and ideas and resources to make the project happen. So, yeah, I think that there's a lot of potential for moving forward with a lot of the ideas. And sure, it's about beautification, but more than that, it's about honoring the work of those who are down at the waterfront and making it a better place to spend time.
All right. And so this event is when and where?
So this Thursday, the 21st, we're hosting the Salmon Projections at the Bronoff Museum.
When is it?
At 7 p.m. So it's a little bit later than some of our events because we're hoping to catch a little bit of the twilight hour so that we can get these projections to really glow. If the weather is nice, we're going to move the projections outside. We have a huge screen that we're going to be using for them, and we're hoping that it can be kind of a fun social gathering. And if it's raining, that's okay, too. We have plenty of space inside. But no matter what, at 7 p.m. on Thursday, we'll have fresh sushi, great food, great conversation, great people. So in addition to myself, Deborah, and Anjali coming down, we're also going to be hosting a few guests from off-island who are coming down just for this event. But we're really looking forward to it and think that it'll be just a great way to get people together and to start talking about the relationship that we all have with salmon and the value of it in our community and in our lives.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining today.
Thank you, Kayla.
Thanks, Kayla.